You're listening to Bottom Shelf Bitcoin, episode 12. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Bottom Shelf Bitcoin, the podcast that puts Bitcoin knowledge within everyone's reach. As always, I'm your host, Josh Humphrey, and today my guest is Akin Fernandez. You might know him on Twitter as Beautyon, but he's actually more than just a Twitter Bitcoin pundit. He is actually starting a company called Azteco, which is a consumer Bitcoin top-up service. So without further ado, Akin, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so we are going to talk about a number of things. I'm really excited about this. Kind of give us, before we go into Azteco, what is your background and kind of what were you doing in life before Bitcoin?
Before Bitcoin, I was running a publishing company called Erdile, and we're famous for, doing a couple of different things. But I've always had an interest in what Bitcoin does. Before Bitcoin arrived, I was working on something many years ago that utilized Xiaomi and eCash to do something similar to what we're doing with Azteco. And because Xiaomi and eCash, the company, didn't take off, I had to put that aside and do other things. But then when I heard about Bitcoin, I knew that this was what I've been waiting for a very long time.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you go back I didn't actually discuss Xiaomi and eCash on this show yet. I was kind of waiting to do an episode at some point on kind of the anarchy roots of, and the cryptographic roots of Bitcoin. So I actually haven't gotten there yet, but yeah, that's really interesting that your stuff even goes back to that. So that's very cool.
In fact, I have some of the documents that we created back in that time, and I'm going to publish them soon when Azteco goes online to show that this is the fulfillment of a very long ambition and project that I've always wanted to do. And it's Bitcoin is like a dream come true, essentially.
Yeah, so this must be very exciting for you then to have this thing that you put time and effort and sweat into and it kind of seemed to maybe fizzle out, and then now here it is again.
Exactly right. I wouldn't use the word fizzle out. Basically, the problem that the Xiaomi and eCash had has been solved by Bitcoin. And of course, that was solved by BitTorrent before it was solved by Bitcoin. So it was a merging of several techniques into one thing. And because I'd seen the eCash before and used BitTorrent, obviously, for other things, it made perfect sense to me almost immediately. And it was a question of not if the idea was a bad idea, but whether this was the actual one, where the software was correct and it was an irrevocable digital cash. And as we've discovered over many years, that's exactly what it is. Bitcoin is an irrevocable distributed digital cash that can't be undone. It's Pandora's box that's been opened, a beneficial Pandora's box.
That's really cool. So yeah, let's go ahead then and jump into Azteco and kind of how it works and what makes it different from other ways. And then we'll kind of, through all that, get to some of the other stuff, the legislation and things that we want to talk about. So kind of give us a brief overview of what Azteco is.
Azteco uses the same form of delivery that top-up services for mobile phones use. So for example, in all over the third world, and even in places like the UK, you can top up a pay-as-you-go telephone with a 16-digit voucher that you can buy in a supermarket or 7-Eleven, the equivalent of a 7-Eleven, all these sorts of places. And what we do is we deliver Bitcoin in exactly that form. Now, anybody who's used a pay-as-you-go phone knows just exactly how convenient it is and exactly how it works. In the telephone case, you just have to press the numbers out on the keypad. And then a second later, your phone credit arrives in your phone. With Bitcoin, it's no different. Instead of it arriving on your phone inside your SIM account, it arrives in an application that you download. So these two things running side by side look absolutely identical. The only difference is telephone network credits only work inside your telephone network, inside the service provider's network, whereas Bitcoin works only inside of Bitcoin. So if you look at Bitcoin through that lens, it immediately takes a different aspect, a different view to what everybody thinks it is. And in fact, it's a more accurate description of what Bitcoin is because it describes it only as what it actually does and not a superimposed idea that makes you basically mischaracterize Bitcoin and then build services based on a mischaracterization or a wrong idea. So that's the idea of Azteco, to simplify the delivery of Bitcoin based on only the minimum required steps to deliver the Bitcoin without any other assumptions about what Bitcoin is or what it's pretending to be or anything else. We strip away all of that to get down to the simplest possible delivery method. And if we took anything away from Azteco, it wouldn't work because it is the most simple way to deliver Bitcoin. And because it's so simple, it's fast, it's intuitive, and it treats the consumer with respect.
I love simple. Simple is great. So kind of walk me through practically what happens. I go into a convenience store and I say I want to buy a Azteco voucher, and I just, so it, what, it checks the market price at that point and I say how much I want to buy?
You go into your local supermarket and say you want 10 pounds worth of Bitcoin, or if you're in another place, $10 worth of Bitcoin. And then the person at the till enters 10 pounds. And then 5 seconds later, your voucher comes up with a face value of 10 pounds. And we pull the price live from the aggregate of all the exchanges so that you get exactly that amount of Bitcoin at that moment. Now, obviously, if you send that Bitcoin anywhere in the world within 5 minutes, the person who's going to receive it gets that amount. We know that Bitcoin is volatile, but the volatility of it is going down. And as it continues to go down, the window within which that fiat value, nominal value, will be true will be longer and longer and longer until it will basically take days for it to change. So, but that's obviously going to be a long time in the future. But that's essentially the process of buying Bitcoin through Azteco. You go to your Quickie Mart or whatever your outlet is, hand over cash and get a voucher for $10 worth or $20 worth of Bitcoin. And this is going to be very, very useful when micropayment services come online. Let's say that you want to buy an article in the Times of London and they're taking Lightning payments for page views. And each page view costs 3 cents or 5 cents. You don't want to go in and buy £1,000 worth of Bitcoin just to read the newspaper. You only want £5 worth or a similar amount like that so that you can read your daily newspaper. We're thinking in the future. We're thinking far ahead about what sorts of services are going to be required when Bitcoin is used for every single possible permutation of micropayments. And of course, it can also be used for the bigger payments where you buy a voucher for 200 or 300. It's exactly the same as the iTunes gift cards, Amazon gift cards, and all those other cards that you get online. Only with those cards, they're only usable inside those networks, the Amazon site or the iTunes site. And Bitcoin is only usable on the Bitcoin network. It's not money. It's just basically a database entry inside a closed ecosystem where only Bitcoin has any utility.
Right. And so if I wanted to, let's say, I wanted to move that into a hardware device, you know, a Trezor or a Ledger or something like that, what's the process there?
The process is exactly the same. You go to the I didn't actually finish what I was supposed to say last time.
Oh, let's say, go ahead.
Okay, so when you redeem one of our vouchers, you essentially redeem it to a Bitcoin address. That Bitcoin address can be a merchant, can be your own Bitcoin address. So if you have a Trezor, you want to put 10 pounds worth of Bitcoin onto your Trezor. Your Trezor will show you a Bitcoin address that you can send Bitcoin to. And so you redeem your Azteco voucher to that address, and it goes obviously straight into that Trezor, into that Trezor address. And of course, it can go into your mother's Trezor address, or somebody anywhere in the world. We don't care where it goes, as long as the address is valid, and it's a valid address on the Bitcoin network. An interesting way to think about it is Bitcoin being exactly like T-Mobile, only it's a T-Mobile that doesn't belong to anybody. So instead of buying credits or sending messages inside T-Mobile's network, you're sending messages inside the Bitcoin network that anybody can join onto anywhere in the world with a piece of software that you download or write yourself if you're very, very clever. But that's the way to think about it. It's a new kind of network that doesn't belong to anybody, that anybody can participate in.
Okay, so now we're kind of focusing here on the simplicity of it, and I love the simplicity of it because so far it hasn't been simple. Let's talk about why every other way of acquiring Bitcoin is not simple. You know, for me, I think the biggest frustration is that I have to choose between either some big centralized exchange that has to submit, or I guess doesn't have to submit, but submits to KYC, AML laws. They collect all my data. Or if I want to go through another method, it's very arduous. I've got to put a whole lot of work into doing this without, you know, giving everyone my information.
That's exactly right. And something like Azteco could have been built from the beginning if people's assumptions about Bitcoin were correct. It's only because they've made the wrong assumptions that they've built a business model and a process that's difficult for everybody to use. If you start with the wrong assumptions in Bitcoin because you come from a wrong background, not a software background, then all the processes you're going to incorporate into your provision of service are going to start from the wrong starting point. So, for example, if you're from a banking background, you're going to treat Bitcoin like it's money. And then all the assumptions to do with dealing with money are going to be baked into your process. And that makes it slow, it makes it centralized and inconvenient. But if you look at Bitcoin from the correct perspective, or even let's take away the correct perspective, from a different perspective, then you can build a business model that is more Bitcoin-like and easier to work with, and better for the consumer. It's better for the consumer's privacy, better for the consumer's ease of use. It's better across the board. And of course, the Bitcoin that's delivered at the end of each process is the same Bitcoin. Only one is arduous, and the other one is not arduous.
Right. It's a huge pain. And so I'm going to play devil's advocate here for a second, or let's talk about KYC AML there briefly, because I've covered them kind of before. I guess these laws are based on various governments attempting to.
You say these laws, this is very, very interesting. Which laws are you talking about? Because there are no laws that have been drafted specifically to deal with Bitcoin.
Correct. I meant more traditional KYC and AML laws as they regard fiat currencies.
Exactly. So if we understand what Bitcoin is, which is not money, Bitcoin is not money, it's a kind of database, then obviously KYC AML should not apply to it. If KYC AML cannot be applied to Bitcoin, then it can be applied to Oracle. It can be applied to MySQL. it can be applied to Google spreadsheets, because you can make a Google spreadsheet which is shareable amongst many, many people who can write to it and read from it. And they can use that as a distributed ledger that will allow them to simulate money. Does that make Google spreadsheets a form of money? Nobody in their right mind would say that. But because all of the signs and all of the language used around Bitcoin, including the symbols that are used in the applications, all come from the world of money, everybody just assumes that Bitcoin is money. In fact, when you make a Bitcoin transaction, you're not actually moving anything from A to B. You're just signing a piece of text which gets transmitted to the network, incorporated in the record of all the transactions in the Bitcoin network, and that's basically it. You don't actually receive anything. You don't send anything except for a signed instruction, for want of a better description. And even on your inside your Bitcoin wallet, you have a whole bunch of unspent outputs, which the application shows the aggregate of. You have lots of different transactions in there that basically, if you were to look at them in the raw, would be very confusing to the user. What the developers do is simplify and abstract away all that complexity so that you can have a single number there, which is your quote-unquote balance. But it really isn't a balance. It really isn't a single number. It's just convenience to make it easier for you to use Bitcoin. So it's very, very important when we start talking about things like KYC AML and whether Bitcoin's a commodity or whether it's a security or anything else, to look at what Bitcoin actually is before we try and determine what kind of law should apply to it. And once you pull back the veil and look at Bitcoin exactly what Bitcoin exactly is, then there's no way you can come to the conclusion that it's money. That's absolutely for certain. And the implications of making this mistake of calling Bitcoin money will spread a very bad outcome across many software disciplines. Because if they can call Bitcoin money, they can call literally anything money. Any kind of record keeping with Berkeley DB, MySQL, PostgreSQL, and you name it, they can say that it's a form of money. Even keeping a score in a video game can be construed as money if they wanted to. And of course, they would want to do that because it allows them to get into your software and make you do all sorts of things to control users. Recently, I've made a couple of posts about the similarity between video game scores and in-game monies and Bitcoin. And there was one on Facebook called Farmville, which had many, millions of accounts, all of which had access to this thing called Farmbucks. Now, nobody, not a single one of those users, was asked to KYC AML. And when you point this out, the objections are usually, well, you couldn't transfer it, you couldn't do this with it, you couldn't do that with it. That's absolutely irrelevant. Inside Farmville, you were allowed to use that money. You know, they had that money for the players to utilize. And it's absolutely analogous in Bitcoin, which is a closed system with its own system of quote-unquote points. So when this comes to court, and it's already been to court twice in the United States, all of this will be laid out and pointed out, and no judge that's acting properly will be able to say that Bitcoin is money. It's simply ridiculous.
Okay, now I'm going to play devil's advocate for a second here. I do agree with you on this, but I just want to, just so that we can have it said.
Go right ahead.
I can see the objection being, okay, but nobody's buying, nobody can use Farmbucks to fund terrorism, let's say, or buy drugs, or, participate in human trafficking, right?
Well, those really are devil's advocate questions. Well, those three things are mostly done with the United States dollar. mostly. That's the first thing. Secondly, just because you can do something bad with something, that doesn't mean that ordinary people should be constrained and have their rights infringed because somebody somewhere is frightened of something. The lowest common denominator and the average use case is the standard, not the criminal. And all of the other objections that they make about Bitcoin and its use in so-called crime have been proven to be totally unfounded. All these excuses and all these pretexts are expressions of fear of people who don't understand how technology works and how things advance, because it's very unfamiliar. It's appears to be out of their control. And so they're keen to have some kind of grasp on it. And the way that they think that they can get a grasp on it is by legislation. And of course, we know that legislation doesn't really control the bad guys. It only impacts the good guys. But even so, in a country where you have rights, the government can't just create any kind of law that it wants out of thin air. They have to have a proper pretext, and they have to be the laws they create mustn't infringe on your fundamental rights. So when we talk about Bitcoin, we're talking about publishing. We're talking about, for certainly in the United States, First Amendment protected activities, which is speech in this case. And so the devil's advocate can bring up all kinds of terrible things. Well, what if somebody writes a book and somebody gets their feelings hurt? Well, that's got nothing to do with people to publish to publish anything. And the same thing applies to Bitcoin. And as I say, there's been two court cases already where two poor people have been stung by government agents who mistakenly believe that Bitcoin is money, which of course it isn't. And the judge in two different jurisdictions threw the cases out because it was successfully argued that Bitcoin isn't money. Now, people might get upset when this argument is put forth that Bitcoin isn't money, but they shouldn't be. What they should understand is that the law needs to be used to protect Bitcoiners from onerous regulations and restrictions. And if we don't do this, if we don't say exactly what Bitcoin is and categorize it correctly, then somebody's going to come in to fill that vacuum and then call Bitcoin something which it definitely is not, security or commodity or digital cash or some other nonsense like that. And of course, saying these things and categorizing Bitcoin correctly doesn't change the nature of Bitcoin, doesn't make it less useful. It doesn't mean you can't put a B sign in front of a number and say it's a new form of money. You can call it whatever you like. This is about the law and how it's categorized in the law. And so the law's approach to Bitcoin must be completely kept separate from the marketing and promotion of Bitcoin, which is another thing entirely. As far as the law is concerned, Bitcoin is speech. Bitcoin is just another kind of database, a closed loop database, outside of which the Bitcoin doesn't have any meaning, and everybody has a right to publish on that database. It's as simple as that.
I love it because you cut right to the, again, it's simplifying it. It's great. So it's code, it's text, which is protected free speech. So at least in this country, I don't know what the laws are in other countries.
All it takes is for the United States to accept that Bitcoin is what it is. And if that's the case, then Bitcoin will take over the whole world, because America is an extremely powerful company.
America. Oh, Freudian slip there.
America is an extremely powerful and influential country. All the other countries in the world will fall in line if Bitcoin is categorized correctly there. And I think this case is very, very strong. And it doesn't matter what the vested interests and their messengers, for want of a better description, say about what they think Bitcoin is. When it goes to court, it will be proved what Bitcoin is. This is the difference between people who use analogies to describe Bitcoin and people who describe Bitcoin as it actually is. When you describe Bitcoin as it actually is, which I haven't actually done in this short talk we've had, but when you describe it as it actually is down in the actual software and show that it's text, then all doubts about what it is are blown away.
So then, I guess as we're saying all this, then the reality is all of these exchanges that require all of this information from their users, nobody has forced them to do this. They're doing it on their own.
That's right. All this KYC AML business started before the Bitcoin phenomenon was a global phenomenon like it is now. They voluntarily decided to do this. Probably because they're scared witless that in the future that something would happen. But if they hadn't done it, if they had categorized Bitcoin correctly, they would be just like the Hollywood Stock Exchange. Now, when you do things on the Hollywood Stock Exchange, they don't KYC, AMLU, or do anything else like that because it's obviously just a self-contained game. And Bitcoin is exactly the same as that. It doesn't matter that people will accept goods and services in exchange for Bitcoin. That doesn't change the nature of Bitcoin. And I think, and I actually wrote about this, if the early Bitcoin quote-unquote pioneers had taken a more taken a history of this subject into consideration, they would never have made those wrong-footed mistakes they had made in trying to gain legitimacy by going to the state and having the rubber stamp of the state on their foreheads. That was a massive, massive error. And I think this lesson has been learned. Look at all the ICOs that have refused to register with the SEC. Not one of them. It's absolutely unbelievable. Look at the way that Lightning now is being categorized as a messaging system and not money, even though it's built out of Bitcoin. Look at the way this... the token people have been very, very careful about not calling tokens money, even though they're indistinguishable from Bitcoin in terms of their being pure data. So the message has been, the lesson has been learned by the community that they have to be very careful about how they categorize these new services, and calling something money or financial instrument of any kind is a very, very big mistake.
Okay, in light of that, then why would local Bitcoin suddenly change and start enacting these KYC, AML, requirements?
Maybe they were threatened. I mean, it's as simple as that. If somebody threatened them, they're going to do what they're told. They're making a fortune. I mean, their volumes are astronomical. And if everybody in their system goes along with it, they've got nothing to lose. They'll pass the cost on to each user and find themselves immune from prosecution.
So do you think it's – and I guess we're now in speculation territory here. But who would want to – who would put pressure on local Bitcoins?
Well, the question is, who can put pressure on local Bitcoins? It's going to be either their own lawyers who have told them a horror story and scared them, or it's going to be some government agency, which is probably less likely, that's told them that they have to start doing it. It's going to be one of those things. But in the end, when Bitcoin is far bigger than anybody can imagine today, and it's going from billions of phones to billions of phones, it's going to be as uncontrollable as email. This is inevitable. And so getting this right now, getting this correct, and you're thinking about it correct, is absolutely essential, not only for the businessmen and women, but it's essential for the jurisdiction that wants to be the home of Bitcoin, natural home of Bitcoin. So when these pronouncements are handed down, I think a lot of people essentially by anybody who's thinking about the future, knows that this is a huge mistake. Well, let's look at Uber, for example. Uber started their business without getting any taxi licenses. They just opened up Uber everywhere they could open it up rapidly as possible. It's only after they were everywhere, after they were ubiquitous, after the public loved them, that they started to think about taxi licenses. And then they were in the position of being able to dictate the terms or even whether they would apply for a license at all. And I think that's the correct way to think about this. You're providing a beneficial service. You're not doing anything that's harmful. You're serving people in a way that's expected. Certainly people from a free country understand that in a free country, you can do anything you want, and everything you want to do is legal if it's not illegal. So, for example, you doing something like Uber is legal by default because it's not illegal. It has to be made explicitly illegal before it becomes illegal. So running an application like Uber, which is not really a taxi service, it's another messaging service, is legal. That should be your starting point in doing anything. And I think a lot of these companies have made a mistake by believing that KYC AML is necessary when there is no law saying anything about KYC AML. Nobody even knew what Bitcoin was. You know, very, very few people could even describe it. So to jump to the conclusion that you have to have some kind of registration to be able to do this, it's just absolutely mad. And it doesn't fit in with the facts of the reality, where there are other services, other video games, and all sorts of things where scores kept with a dollar sign or some other sign in front of it, where nobody imagines for an instant that they have to get a registration to run a database.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring up Uber, because I think Uber has had pressure put on it and against it in New York, I think, and in a couple of other places as well. But people trying to protect the taxi industry, and now New York is again kind of in the same thing with Bitcoin, right? They started with the Bit license thing, and then I assume you've seen where this New York Attorney General has issued these proclamations to these various Bitcoin exchanges.
Now, which proclamations were those?
Basically, he was wanting a bunch of information, on how they operate in, for quote unquote consumer protection.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, I did see that. This is another hilarious shenanigan that these people do, saying that they're there to protect the public. Now, Bitcoin's been running now for basically 8 years plus, and the consumer has been very well protected by the network. These people have nothing to add to Bitcoin. They, the consumers consumers don't need them to be protected. I think this also rankles these guys, that they understand that they're just not needed. Look at Amazon's conflict resolution and eBay's conflict resolution systems, which are all in-house and very, very satisfying, very, very, very satisfactory, sorry. None of these people need the courts. And with Bitcoin, nobody needs banks. And this is a major, major threat, not just to, and when I say this, I mean eBay, Amazon, and Bitcoin in combination are a threat not just to the service providers and the state, but they're a threat to the idea that you need the state in conflict resolution and those sorts of things and consumer protection. Look at multisig, for example. The multisig is consumer protection that works on the Bitcoin network. If all parties don't agree that transactions happen successfully, then it can be essentially undone. And this doesn't require a court. It doesn't require an ombudsman or anybody else. It's just all done with the software. And then when you superimpose on that reputation systems and all the other nice things that have been running for decades, you get a very, very powerful system where consumer protection has been pushed completely into the world of business. And I think these people can smell that somebody's coming for their lunch and they don't like it. And New York is a very, very good example of the worst possible bad actor in terms of they're trying to stop Bitcoin from doing what it's supposed to do. This ridiculous, un-American, and astonishing BitLicense, which has essentially killed Bitcoin activity in New York and only allowed a few cronies in through the gate, is a perfect example of the worst possible outcome. And of course, all those people who say that regulation legitimizes Bitcoin, everything, this is actually what it does. It actually stifles and strangles Bitcoin.
Absolutely.
And I think a lot of people really actually truly believed that this BitLicense would be quote unquote good for Bitcoin. It's only now that they're seeing that it was a disaster. And this is why the whole language has changed about Ethereum tokens and everything else, because they've seen that this is a nightmare on steroids and they need to get out as far away from it as possible. Now, for the poor, hapless New Yorkers, it might be too late for them. You know, there might be a Supreme Court case about this, which might kill BitLicense forever, but it'll take years to happen. So essentially, it's everywhere else but New York, where this your freedom to program, freedom to run a database, is going to be available to you. But luckily,
but again, oh, go ahead.
No, carry on.
I was going to say, but again, this is, you know, these laws are only really effective to people who willingly submit to them, you know, high profile businesses and things like this, because, you know, if you had somebody on the, I say on the street, and I don't mean anything in particular by that, just that they're not, you know, high profile, but, you know, if I wanted to sell you, well, I don't know what the laws are in New York. I don't live there, but, you know, let's just say a book for Bitcoin, and it just was, you know, you and me at a restaurant and we just exchanged, they can't stop that. And so this is legislation written by people who don't even understand what they're legislating.
That's exactly right. And all of the businesses, whether it be a bookseller or any kind of other business, if they take Bitcoin as a form of payment, they're going to pay taxes on that. So you want people to increase the number of ways they can pay, because most people accept that they're going to pay taxes. And with Bitcoin, we have a global system of electronic money, for want of a better description, which of course isn't, where the endpoints and where all the processing is done will also be done by companies that are taxed in those jurisdictions. So if these people were thinking, if they were capable of thinking, they would want these Bitcoin companies to be incorporated in their jurisdiction. BitLicense would never have been written if those people really understood the amount of money that the state could make by having Bitcoin processing companies in their jurisdiction. And because it comes with consumer protection essentially built in, they really didn't have that as a cause to legislate. So one of these countries or jurisdictions is going to wake up to this. And it's going to be because a huge company is processing a lot of Bitcoin transactions and paying a lot of taxes. I don't know if you know that there's been a bidding for Amazon's new headquarters going on in the United States, where these different states have been vying to be the home of Amazon's new super headquarters.
I think we're trying to get it here in Texas.
Yes. Well, that's exactly what they should be doing with Bitcoin. They shouldn't be passing laws to control Bitcoin companies. They should be on their knees begging Bitcoin entrepreneurs to come and incorporate in their state. That's what they should really be doing. They should be promising that they're not going to touch them, not going to write any law, any regulation of any kind, if they will come and incorporate in that state. They should even give them tax breaks, 50% off to go incorporate there. They should be in a bidding war for Bitcoin companies. That's what they should be doing. But they're not, because they don't understand the opportunity. And when they do wake up to the opportunity, it may be too late. That's why the Isle of Man has people running to incorporate there, because they seem to have the balance right, or one of the better places to incorporate, because they the balance there is tending towards right, I should say. But they could also have their lunch eaten if some other jurisdiction says, no, we're better than the Isle of Man, and our regulations are even more favorable for you, and our tax rates are more favorable to you as well. And in software, it's very, very easy to move a company from one place to another, because where the servers are is not where the business function is. So it's very, very easy to do.
For clarification, so you could move, you know, where you say the business is and move the servers, and especially if you have programmers, I guess they could all be still working remotely wherever they are, correct?
Right, that's exactly right. Blockchain.info, the infamous blockchain.info now, they have a software developing offices in central London, but they're incorporated in Liechtenstein.
Oh, really?
Yes, they used to be incorporated in London, in the UK, and now they're incorporated in Liechtenstein, but all their programming is done in London. So the world is a very flexible place, and in software, it's not like manufacturing cars or anything where you have to have a dedicated site that can't be just picked up and moved anywhere. Software can be picked up and moved and executed anywhere. It can be done anywhere in the globe. And so you've got to attract businesses in a way that's favorable to them, because they have all the flexibility.
Mm, yeah. So, and real quick, I think we're going to have to wrap up soon, but I think let's talk about for a second, you know, while we're talking about them not understanding things that they're trying to regulate, let's go back to this idea of Bitcoin being used for crime, or let's even just say undesirable things.
No, it's not. You know, well, let's take the dollar. Most of the things the dollar is used for are completely legitimate. And so it's not,
right.
It's actually not correct to keep thinking about Bitcoin only in terms of the bad things that it can be used for. Everything can be used in for a bad thing, from a hammer to a car to, you know, an 18-wheeler truck. The 18-wheeler trucks and trains and all these sorts of things are essential to keeping goods moving inside of a country. Now, you're going to get some bad guys who do bad things with trucks, but nobody's talking about putting new rules in about trucks. And Bitcoin is exactly the same. The market for Bitcoin is very, very large. The vast majority of things that we've done with it are completely innocuous. And so to keep focusing on these edge use cases is not rational. Can't put it any other way. It's hard to think about the beneficial things that you can do with Bitcoin, because I think, first of all, it's not as exciting as talking about crime. And
right.
Secondly, people who spend their time thinking about all the good things you can do with Bitcoin are normally working in Bitcoin businesses. So it's not, people are not trained to think about the good things that you can do with any tool. They seem to be trained to think about the bad things. And this is why this KYC AML business of all these early Bitcoin businesses was the case, because people are trained to think about bad things, the bad outcomes, and to focus on them too much and give them too much prominence. That's why they voluntarily did all this utter nonsense, which has nothing to do with the reality of Bitcoin, which wasn't even being used for anything at all. So if we're going to talk about Bitcoin, we need to talk about the normal use cases and how it's going to help people, and not the bad, the bad things. I mean, let's think about this. We want to talk about the bad things Bitcoin is being used for. There are 4 billion people in the world who don't have bank accounts. At least 500 million of them have smartphones, and they don't have bank accounts. So this is a worldwide, very large problem that Bitcoin can solve directly, especially now with Lightning. And there are new tools coming on stream that will allow many people who don't have bank accounts to use Bitcoin as if it was a bank account. One of them is OpenDime. You don't even need a smartphone to use OpenDime. So Bitcoin is a tool that's going to help a lot of people. It's not rational to only talk about the edge use cases when we have a very, very big problem, an interesting problem right in front of our faces that needs to be solved. And that's what we're trying to do with Azteco, to make it easier for people to get Bitcoin so that all of these people can be served and they can have access to all the services that you and I take for granted, like buying things on Amazon. It's absolutely true. You laugh. A lot of people can't buy things on Amazon. It's absolutely absurd. Now with Bitcoin, they can. All they have to do is use purse.io, and they have access to all of the stuff on Amazon, just like people with credit cards do. And of course, because payer fraud is totally eliminated with Bitcoin, it removes a very big barrier to people who are not credit card holders from buying things on Amazon. Now, I just said something which is absolutely incredible, which people just gloss over. Bitcoin removes the possibility of payer fraud. Payer fraud with credit cards is an enormous problem. It costs billions a year. Just if it solved that problem alone, it'd be worth global adoption just for those savings. Bitcoin's going to solve a lot of problems. And that's what we need to be concentrating on, and not just glossing over them, over these things, that these amazing things that it does, without considering them carefully. Now, of course, the people who are anti-Bitcoin say that the irreversibility of Bitcoin transactions is a problem. Actually, it's not. It's a huge benefit. It means that payers can always be trusted, and you'll never get payer fraud. This is a revolution just by itself. And that's only one small part of everything else that Bitcoin is going to bring to the global e-commerce economy. So I much prefer to talk about those positive things than these edge cases, which are essentially useless.
I hadn't even really considered the payment fraud stuff. I'm kind of just sitting here thinking about it now. I'm in the same boat with you. I think it's such a mischaracterization or a gross stereotype, let's say, to, that's probably not even the right word for it, but just saying like, oh, this is the only thing that it's used for. And it's not. It's overwhelmingly not used for drugs or whatever else. But even beyond that, even if, you know, people want to do these laws and for tracing purposes and things, I mean, you know, you and I had kind of talked another time previously about, you know, the idea of dirty bitcoins or dirty money is ridiculous too, because, you know, eventually it's all dirty, right? In the same way that if you were able to track every dollar bill, eventually they would all have some kind of undesirable transaction attached to them.
That's exactly right. And because Bitcoin is never destroyed and recycled like the dollar is destroyed and recycled, eventually every single Bitcoin that's in circulation is going to have some kind of undesirable transaction attached to it. Now, remember also, in some jurisdictions, buying things of one kind is illegal, and buying things of another kind is legal. So you're going to have to be able to differentiate between where these different quote-unquote crimes happened, so that the Bitcoin taint record, which we'll probably try and keep on the blockchain, so that where these all these events are being accounted for, that you're only accounting for the correct kind of taint in the correct jurisdiction. It's just a complete nonsense. And of course, once again, we're onto this subject of taint, which is a totally artificial construct, and it's got nothing to do with math or Bitcoin. But this is how the conversations inevitably get pushed around to this area, which is of no use to anybody. And literally, these blockchain analysis companies are of no use to anybody. They don't add anything to the ecosystem. They don't help any of the consumers. It's just utter nonsense. And hopefully, the technical improvements coming to Bitcoin will make all of those companies go out of business. Because if Bitcoin is made more anonymous, then their whole mission statement, you know, mission purpose becomes impossible. So I'm very confident that that's going to happen to them. And they'll basically deserve it because they're not adding anything to anybody's life. They're just pretending that they're the only people on the earth and their way of life is the only way of life. And all the people who don't have access to Bitcoin, all the people who are languishing without the things that we take for granted are not to be considered. And I don't think like that.
I love it. All right. Well, I think I could probably sit here and talk to you all day. I guess it's all night for you there, but I think we're
going to have... I've got into my stride now, which took a bit of my stride. So how long is the whole broadcast?
Well, this one will probably push into an hour because we've been talking for a while, but that's all right. It's good content.
Oh, I hope it's the truth.
No, I mean, yeah, it's, and you know, we talk about, hey, we don't want to talk about these things, but I think at some point, sometimes we have to talk about these things so we can say, this is wrong and you'll hear this, but this is why it's wrong. This is why this isn't true. When people tell you this or people ask you about this, don't fall for it. So sometimes we just have to say those things.
I agree completely. But once again, with Uber, all the Uber users didn't care, don't care that their taxi driver isn't part of a taxi union or a taxi company. There's no special laws controlling this the taxi driver. All they care about is that they get from A to B correctly.
Absolutely.
But millions and millions of people have used Uber, and they've used it without any problems. So all of these issues of Uber not being a licensed taxi company and everything else are not the concern of the consumer. They're the concerns of the apparatchiks and of the politicians and all those sorts of people and the taxi companies that are having their businesses disrupted. And the same thing is happening in Bitcoin. All the people who are using Bitcoin every day for whatever they use it for, whether it's for hodling or shopping or anything else, they don't have any problem with Bitcoin. The merchants don't have any problem with Bitcoin. It's only the people from the outside who look into Bitcoin and say, I don't understand this, or I don't like this, or somebody comes and taps someone on the shoulder saying, we're having a problem with it. And if it gets too big, they're going to come and take our business. Those are the people from the outside seeing only a problem in something that works absolutely perfectly and smoothly. The analogy between Uber and Bitcoin is essentially one-to-one.
Yeah, yeah. Man, good stuff. Okay. I'm going to have to let you go, and I hate that because, I like I said, I could sit here and talk about this for hours. But before we let you go, how can people keep up with you?
They can follow me on Twitter, BEAUTYON_.
Yeah, the underscore is important.
Yes, because the underscore is important. And we are also on AZTE.CO_, which is the Azteco Twitter account, where we'll be announcing all Azteco related things very shortly.
Oh yeah. Okay. Sorry. So I forgot to ask. So when does Azteco go live, or when do you start? When can we purchase this?
The plan is to be able to purchase in London in 6 weeks. So that's the plan. We're hard at work getting ready for that. And then we plan to rapidly expand the number of outlets that we have. And because we don't have to deliver any hardware anywhere or manufacture it, we believe that we're going to be able to spread very rapidly. So one day you'll just wake up and in your locale, there'll be an Azteco outlet that you can go to and buy Bitcoin in a non-invasive, consumer-friendly and ethical way at a good price.
Well, very good. And so this will just print out on like the existing receipts for or using the existing hardware that these stores already have.
We plan to have it available through the normal point of sale equipment, but the first iteration will be on a custom printed sheet of paper that looks very fetching. And we are partnering with Samurai Wallet so that when you get your Bitcoin voucher, all you have to do is scan the QR code and the voucher will be redeemed into your Samurai Wallet without having to tap in a single number.
Ah, I love it. It's a wallet I already use. I can't ask you to make it any simpler than that.
You could, but it wouldn't do any good. I'm breaking it.
All right. Well, very good. All right. You guys follow Joaquin at beautyon_ or azte.co. All right. Well, thanks for coming on the show.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right, everybody. That's going to do it for our show today. So remember, if you like the show, then click the like button or share it. Give us good reviews on iTunes, on Stitcher, post it on Facebook, post it on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at BottomShelfBTC. If you want to get in touch with me or if you have a suggestion for the show, hit me up there. If you want to contribute financially, you can support me on Patreon, patreon.com/bottomshelfbitcoin. If you'd like to make a donation in Bitcoin, you can use a Paynim-enabled wallet on our donate page, bottomshelfbitcoin.com/donate. And you can always go to bottomshelfbitcoin.com/kidsbook, and that will direct you over to the Tuttle Twins website with my special link so that any Tuttle Twins purchase will give a kickback to the show. So you can get great books and support the show at the same time. Remember, all the links will be in the show notes for today's episode, bottomshelfbitcoin.com/12. Come back next week where we will be interviewing Nicolas Dorier, talking about financial sovereignty for merchants accepting Bitcoin by running their own payment processing server. That's going to be a great episode. All right, for Bottom Shelf Bitcoin, I'm Josh Humphrey. Thanks for listening.